Arsenal have scored 7 goals from corners. In Premier League, there's another one beckoning. Declan Rice goes towards the far stick. Gyökeres is there to put it away.
The ball to the back area, put back across, and there you go. A yard from goal, he's not going to miss from there. Anticipating it, reacting. Fantastic finish there from Gyökeres.
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFullen.
Hello.
We've come back after the first round of the FA Cup. It's late autumn now, isn't it? It's November. The season is in full swing. And as such, of course, managers are being sacked. They're being sacked left, right and centre. Two fell this week, one in the Premier League, the fourth casualty of the season, and one in the Championship, the third one down in the Championship. Yeah, and it wasn't any surprise at all that Vitor Pereira was sacked, was it really? 10 games in, another defeat at the weekend, this time at Fulham. He was always going to get sacked, wasn't he? It was just when, wasn't it?
Well, I think so. I mean, that was his eighth defeat in 10 games, which, I mean, tells its own story, doesn't it? And they are 2 points. So that's actually, I'm just looking at the league table now. I was thinking, well, maybe they got a win in there. They didn't. They just got a couple of draws, which is awful. But of course, between the start of the season and now him being sacked, they gave him a new contract, didn't they? which is just mad. So they've inflated the amount that they're going to have to pay him to get rid of him, when he was already doing quite badly when he signed the new contract. He must have thought it was Christmas come early. I suppose good for him. But yeah, I mean, you know, just looking at the numbers, I mean, I don't think even he could complain about that. In fact, he won't be complaining because he's got tons of cash just rolling into his account now. But yeah, I mean, Wolves need to do something because after 10 games to have 2 points and just to get battered week in, week out, you know, they need to make a change. So yeah, not entirely unsurprising and probably the right move, I would think.
It's pretty much exactly the same that happened to them last season, wasn't it? Gary O'Neill was in charge of them at the start of the season. They had an awful start, didn't they? They didn't win for, I think, 10 games, didn't they? They went 10 games without a win at the start of the season. And Gary O'Neill was sacked because of that. I wonder what's happened to him now.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, but apparently, Graham, he, and I'm saying this with a degree of sarcasm, apparently he is in the frame to replace Vitor Pereira as Wolves coach. So I can only assume that he's still on the payroll. So, because he's not working, he's not worked since. And as I'm sure listeners are aware, it goes one or two ways. When they pay off your contract, they don't actually necessarily write you a big fat check and say bye-bye. They just say, well, look, we'll just keep paying you your monthly salary until you find another job. And then we'll stop paying you your monthly salary, which is off, really, because what they should do is they should just say, no, well, hang on a second. I have a contract all the way up here. You pay off the balance of my contract. Anyway, yada, yada. I don't know the situation, but it wouldn't be at all surprising if Gary O'Neill was still on salary at Wolves, and so which case, it's the most straightforward thing to do, is to simply, you know, get the guy that you're previously on just back in. He doesn't have to sign any paperwork, no P45, something like that, no references from previous employers. It's actually a very, very convenient and very efficient way of doing things. Well done, Wolves, if that's what you're going to do. There'll be a catch somewhere.
Yeah, they certainly don't want to check their records and see how we got on last time, because it was pretty hopeless, really.
The HR department going, can we just double check Gary's reason for leaving? Oh.
Oh, yeah, that. All those games he didn't win.
I was thinking something also quite familiar about this. I wonder what is it? So I typed into Google, Gary O'Neill sacked in the morning Wolves, and found this article published on the 4th of December, 2024. Sacked in the morning, Wolves boss, O'Neill, under fire. Sacked in the morning, that was the chant belted out from one corner of Goodison Park on Wednesday evening when they lost 4-0. That was nearly a year ago. And here we are, a year later, and a different manager sacked in the morning, and now they seem to want to be bringing back the previous manager who was getting that level of chanting from the Wolves fans. So, I don't know, it feels to me as though there's something running a little bit deeper here than the coach. I'm just going to toss it out here.
Well, yeah, but it is the season for rehiring managers, though, isn't it? I mean, you've got Moyes back at Everton, you've got Chris Wilder back at Sheffield United, so why not?
Again,
Xavi Gracia's back at Watford, but then I think Watford have run out of new people to sign as their manager, haven't they? But yeah, everyone's doing it. It's as in vogue as set pieces, isn't it?
It is. It's the new long ball. Or it's the old long ball, or long throw-ins, or something like that. But it's definitely not playing out from the back, because that's old hat. Who does that, Grandad?
I sat and watched about half of a Bundesliga game. I thought, what is this nonsense that they're playing here? Good grief, lump it up the pitch. Come on. Show a bit about you, honestly.
Maybe this is the problem, though, is people just don't know what to expect from football anymore. What do we do? Are we playing the slick modern style? Or are we just playing the agricultural game that we all grew up with and loved? Maybe that's something we can talk about today. Maybe it's something we can talk about whether or not the turnover of managers this season has anything to do with the other main topic of conversation this season. And that is obviously that things are reverting back to an older form of English football. Or are they? Or does it just feel that way? Is it just slightly look like they picked up Tony Pulis's coaching manual? Or is there something a bit more fancy about it? We'll try and pick the bones of that conversation. I don't know how well we'll do, because none of us are really experts in tactical analysis. But we'll try anyway, won't we? Won't we, Terry?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. But sadly, yeah, I have not done the research to be able to back this up, unfortunately.
Good.
I am sorry to say. But it does seem as though that there's been a change.
Yeah.
And I think apparently it's Pep's fault. But anyway.
All Pep's fault. Mm-hmm. And I think it's mainly Pep's fault because we can't blame Klopp at the moment. But I think it's as much Klopp's fault as well. We've had years of Pep versus Klopp, haven't we? That has dominated English football. I mean, the two of them were pushing for titles, beating everyone. I did do a little bit of research the other day when I was looking at how well teams have started the season, just to counter anyone saying, oh yeah, it's Arsenal's to walk away with. And I did notice about four seasons ago, it was Chelsea who got off to this kind of start, and they only conceded 3 goals in their first 10 games and were 8 points behind City by the time Christmas came around. So things change. It was that season where both Liverpool and City finished up with more than 90 points. They just beat everyone in the second half of the season. And I got to think, is this the root of why we're seeing so many things change? And I think we can see things that have changed over the last few years, things that we've talked about. Like over the last season, it was how the middle class teams were doing so well. And that was evident in the way of how teams that had just come up were struggling, because they couldn't get any points anywhere. They couldn't even get points off teams in the lower half of the table, because teams in the lower half of the table had perfected their mid-blocks. Oh, yeah, the mid-blocks. How sexy is that? Should we talk a bit about mid-blocks? Is it mid-blocks? Are these the things that are responsible for the way we're playing now? Is that a way that you counter the high press, overloads, all these sorts of things that we've been introduced to with the styles of play of Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp? Or is it all just coming in from a lot of different directions? Terry, what's your vibe? What's your gut instinct as far as this is concerned?
I think that, and I know you and the listeners are going to accuse me of perhaps showing a little bit of bias here and maybe, you know, we're focusing a little bit too much on Crystal Palace, but I think it's actually Oliver Glasner's fault. Because I think Pep was so traumatised after losing a cup final 1-0 that he has gone back to the drawing board. And I think that he, and he's not the only one, has gone, the quality in the Premier League now is such that even the middle class clubs are so well organised and have such good players that actually it's really, really difficult to play through them now.
Yeah.
So we need to find some hacks to get through. I wouldn't suggest these are necessarily short, long-term tactical changes. I'm not suggesting that Pep Guardiola has now become a disciple of Charles Reap or something like that. But it is possible that what he's done is he's gone, we probably need to go to the old playbook, look at the set pieces and see if we can find an edge there. And I think maybe part of that was the experience of losing the final. Of course, it's not just him, though. Famously, Arteta, Mikel Arteta. You know, he's got that guy on the touchline who does the set pieces that they always cut to whenever they're about to take the set piece.
Indeed.
And he's just standing there looking, oh, this is my moment. You know, he's got good Brentford first team coach energy about him, sort of like, you know, for a couple of years' time or something like that. And, you know, they do that whole bit where they all line up together and then they run along the back and then run in and so on. It's quite cute and funny. And they do actually score goals from it and it does work. But I think it is because of the growth and the development of the middle class teams that the bigger teams are now starting to embrace what would have been considered perhaps once upon a time, quite recently, quite low tactics in order to find a way through. There was quite a bit of narrative about Palace Brentford, about that game.
Mm-hmm.
And the sense that Keith Andrew was getting a taste of his own medicine and that Brentford in general, a team that plays the percentages, plays the numbers and are almost, if they were not careful, turning into that same kind of Cambridge United, Wimbledon of the 90s kind of like narrative around them, which is grossly unfair because they're tons better football team than that lot were. But because, again, they play the percentages, they look for those hacks, those ways of trying to get out of there. And I think people maybe thought it was quite funny that Brentford got a taste of their own medicine in there. I mean, very, very low intensity, mid-table mediocrity sort of like narrative going on there and possibly missed by a lot of people because it is ultimately terribly dull. But glad to give it an airing here on this here podcast. So there's definitely something in it.
Well, if we can blame Brentford, I'm all for it, quite frankly.
It's not even a place. Let's just remember, Brentford, not a place. Bit like Crystal Palace.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a good point though, isn't it? Because Brentford promoted and did really well. They beat Arsenal in their first game up in the Premier League a few seasons back. And they've consolidated their position in the Premier League. And like Brighton as well, they have a reputation now of bringing players through, finding bargains that fit the system very, very, very well. And it's no wonder that other teams in that middle of the table, teams like Palace, teams like Bournemouth, want to emulate that and basically just fill up the middle of the table. We talked about this, didn't we, last season, about how they're doing so well. Any team coming up is in real trouble trying to compete, unless, of course, you do it as well. So what are Sunderland doing that has set them apart, do you think?
They've done exactly that. I mean, it was a very risky strategy, obviously. They brought in 14 new players and spent the best part of £200 million, hugely risky strategy. But it's clear that they've followed a very similar model, which is not just a case of going, well, let's just do that then. I mean, you've got to have the right people in. They've got to be experts in their field. The season's across 9 months, of course, but you really only get one shot at it and you've got to get it right. Otherwise, the rot sets in and it's harder to turn things around. I don't expect Sunderland's going to be in the top half of the table come the end of it, but I'd like to think that they won't get relegated after what I've seen now. They're 9 games in and seventh. It's not just about getting the right players in. It's about right getting, I was reading an article today actually about that, and it wasn't just a case of like, this guy's stats look good. This guy looks good when we've watched him live and on video. But it's also, you know, how does this person interact with his teammates? You know, what is his background and things like that? Because you don't want to bring in dickheads that they might take every other box. But, you know, if they've got a bad attitude, then, you know, that causes its problems. But I touched on kind of the data-driven recruitment there. But there's a lot of stuff been going on, hasn't there, over the past few years. And I think you're right, Terry, that Pep's driven a lot of this. Because he came in and he started going, well, I can't have Joe Hart being a goalkeeper, can I? Because he can't kick the ball. Because goalkeepers didn't used to have to kick the ball, did they? They just had to catch it or punch it away or deflect it or let it hit their faces. So now we've got to have a ball-playing goalkeeper. And then he's got to be able to play it out. Then the team's got to be able to play it out from the back. So now we're all doing that and the ball doesn't leave the floor, which is all lovely. And then, as you said about the set pieces coming in, and now we're encouraged to be a bit more agricultural with our football and fire it forward and chuck some long throws into the box to try and create some chaos. And I think it's because the margins are so fine now that, you know, the coaches and the analysts and the scientists, and they've all got behind the scenes, are just looking for those fine margins and seeing what they can do. And I think that if you can create a bit of chaos with a long throw into the box, the chances are you may create just a little slither of a chance. and that might get you something against very well-organised, well-drilled teams like Palace, for example, which the fact that Sunderland went there and got a draw when we spoke last season about how good the middling clubs, and I feel bad saying that about Palace considering they've won the actual FA Cup. But you take my point that they're so strong, that kind of middle section, that a team like Sunderland or Leeds or Burnley coming up are going to have to really be on their game to get anything out of them at all. I meandered through a lot of that there, but I think the headline of that is it's fine margins and you have to find a way through, because if you stand still, then you're effectively going to go back down.
Well, you say Sunderland seventh, but they haven't played yet this weekend. We're recording this early Monday evening and they kick off later. And if they win, they will go second tonight.
It's a bit of a strange one, that, because all season I've been going, we're just going to get battered, we're going to get battered. And we probably will get battered tonight. But I found myself going, if we win that, I'd go second. That'd be all right, wouldn't it? Not just going, well, that's never going to happen because we're Sunderland. How could we ever go second after 10 games? So I'm allowing myself to think that we're actually all right. And I know we are, but I just can't. My heart's been broken too many times by that club. This current incarnation of Sunderland are incredible. And they were incredible at Palace when I saw them live. They were brilliant at Chelsea when I saw them as well. So hopefully they'll do the same tonight.
So, well, we're building a list here now, guys. I'm sure we're going to get to the root cause of this at some point this evening. But at the moment, we've got like Moneyball transfer strategy. We've got Pep and his tactics. We're narrowing it down here, aren't we? Terry, anything else we should be looking at?
I was going to say, I mean, we're one Diego Maradona reference away from winning the Libero podcast bingo. But I think the context is also just look at the table. Palace are ninth.
Yeah.
You know, on 16 points, but the City are second on 19. It's not a lot in that top half of the table. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned, Graham, and I'm sure you weren't throwing shade at all, but pointing to Bournemouth and saying, referring to them as perhaps a sort of mid-table side who are currently fourth in the table, but next week could be back in the mid-table.
Yeah.
That is a bit of a strange one, although they're having an amazing season. I think it's to be welcomed, because normally early season narratives are usually much more boring than this. They're usually centre around referees and VAR and stuff like that. So it's nice that it's actually been a bit of football,
yeah,
and some changes. And it is, I guess, for those of us of the age that we're at, that remember long ball from the last time round. And if you are, in the unlikely event that you're a younger listener and don't remember the 90s and 90s football, it's nothing like that. It's nothing like that. That was terrible football. It was played on rubbish pitches with players who were good pros, or the ones that weren't hung over. And it was a very, very different game. What we're seeing is that we're just seeing some stuff, largely set-piece stuff. And we do, by coincidence, we've got some coaches who are looking more closely at trying to use set-pieces. Glasner, obviously, Andrews, Arteta, and there are others as well who are just maybe, and it just all seems to be coalescing into more than the narrative, into actual football. I'm pretty certain the statistics will back that up. But it would be interesting to do a comparison, say with this time last season, but it's not easy to do, unfortunately, because different teams, different players, different score lines, different amounts of goal scores and stuff like that. So it's not always straightforward to do comparisons with that. But nevertheless, it is heartening to see that kind of football come back. It makes things a little bit more interesting, especially for those of us who've watched football for many, many years. And it'd be interesting to see whether or not it settles down. Or whether it just goes by the way of giving penalties for shirt tugs, which was another early season narrative that died in its arse by the time we got into double figures.
It all depends on where the narrative is going to go next, I think, because it's easy to have the sort of narrative when the numbers back it up, like the amount of goals we're seeing coming from throw-ins and from set pieces in general. But there's also the term anti-football being used in certain quarters. Yeah, you're right to frown there, Jan. For the benefit of listeners, Jan is frowning because we're not on video.
Yeah, if we'd been on video, you'd have seen the frown. But no, we are not on video.
No, we're not.
This is a term that comes around, and I'm sure it only really comes around if your team's not doing very well. On this podcast, we're not going to be complaining that much about the rise of anti-football in the Premier League because all of our teams aren't doing so bad at the moment. Do you think that there is such a thing as anti-football? And are we seeing it now?
The standard of football that we're watching now is as good as it's ever been in my life. You know, Terry talked about 90s football, 80s football. You know, it was what it was at the time. The players weren't as technically gifted. They weren't as athletic. These guys are proper athletes now, and it's very, very different. It was still enjoyable back in the day. But, you know, we're talking about long balls and long throws being used as a tactic of trying to create some fine margins to create a goal, to create an opportunity. But back then, for a lot of teams, that's all they did. And that was what was terrible. You know, you're sitting watching, if you're a midfielder, it's like, you know, you're just watching the ball go backwards and forwards over your head for some of the teams back then. And that wasn't great to watch. And you're right, the pitches were terrible and some of the players weren't as gifted. And, you know, you put all that together, it's not always a great package. It's very, very different now. And just to say that because it's not a goal that came out of 35 passes with triangles all over the pitch and the last one's a touch in the six-yard box, it doesn't always have to be like that. In the end, do you want your team to win or not? And if they score one goal like that and one goal from a throw or one goal from a corner, you know, in the end, you want to win football matches and you have to do it at a really high level against really, really well-organized and well-coached teams. So, no, I reject the accusation that this is anti-football. This is just an evolution of what is already a great product, I think.
Terry, what about you?
I wouldn't even characterise it as an evolution, although I agree with every word that Jan has said, apart from the evolution. But I think it's a hack. I think it's just that at the moment the playing field is really, really level and they're just looking for things. I don't think that Pep is going to sack off Donnarumma and rehire Joe Hart, dig him out of retirement, because now it's fine, lads. Our keepers can now lump it up the field. It's okay, because there's been a tactical shift. I think that it's just something that, if you like, it's more like a bolt-on than anything else. I don't think it's something to get too worked up about. We might see more of it. It might stick around. English football's always been direct. Even during the peak Klopp Guardiola period of football, English football, you'd sit and watch the ball bypassing players, some of the best players on the planet being bypassed by longer balls, by big diags going in. You would see that happen in a way you would not see it in European football. Like, you'd never see a La Liga team or a Bundesliga team playing with the kind of directness that English football teams do. And that's because that's how English football is. It just is. Culturally, it has been baked into us for a long time. It's only been in recent seasons that we've been playing on billiard tables. You know, for the most part of our history, that's not been the case. And you don't just wash that away with a few years of a couple of savant coaches coming in and changing a lot of things. And so you could look at it and say, well, you know, these players are embracing English football a bit more. I think that that's not the case. I think it's great. It's a great challenge to see some of the best top-class, world-class defenders coping with, you know, teams that are chucking in floaters and long throws. I mean, like, let's see it. You know, some of the best footballers in the world play in England. And when they play, my God, they play really, really well. I mean, like we were talking about before, we were talking about Haaland and just the way he uses the ball, his intelligence, you know, the way he's able to overcome his own minor deficiencies to be able to be this absolute razor-sharp footballer. You know, I mean, like, it doesn't matter whether or not we're scoring with a few more set pieces these days. Still got amazing players. I think it's a bit of an overreaction, and that smacks of early-season narrative, Graham.
Yeah, it could just be that. I mean, personally, I thought at the height of the Pep v Klopp thing, there was a lot of football going around then that just bored me. It was more about this constant transition game where every team would be closing down. The high press was just boring after a while. The whole thing of, yes, these teams are great in possession, but when they were out of possession, they were, I wouldn't say agricultural. They weren't putting in reducers, but the whole thing of tactical fouling, the whole thing of fouling opponents in their defensive third just to break up their possession and just to try to win the ball back. And it just became wearying to me to watch. And it's no surprise now that teams have evolved into this mid-block, or to find that that is the most successful way of countering teams that are constantly pressurizing their possession. I don't think this is a throwback. I think this is just a change of direction. And like many things, there was always going to be counters to this. So it won't be long till someone comes up with a counter for it. there's already talk about limiting the amount of time on a throw-in to be introduced. I don't know what's prompted that, but obviously someone doesn't like the fact that people are scoring off throw-ins at the moment. So that's something that IFAB have felt that they have to jump in at. So it is going to be interesting. Whether or not we're still talking about this come the new year, who knows? But, you know, it fills up a podcast at the beginning of November, doesn't it?
Yeah, it certainly does. I welcome it because last time I was in a football match, two goals came from both of those methods against Chelsea, a long throw and a long ball. And it didn't look agricultural to me. It looked like it looked like a ballet. It was great. I wouldn't think that, sorry to harp on about Sunderland all the time, but it's a good case in point, actually, because that win against Chelsea, you know, it wasn't agricultural. It wasn't brutal. It wasn't 90s football. It wasn't anti-football. It was a decent win. And they exploited the weaknesses of the opposition really well, using whatever methods and tactics were at their disposal. And they used them really well. So it was still entertaining. I was entertained.
I think we also know who might be behind that campaign to cut down the amount of time used of throw-ins. I think we can probably guess if there is a club that's behind it. We can guess which club it is. A really awful football club.
It would have to be a really, really awful football club, wouldn't there?
It really would.
Yes, they really, really would. They really are awful, aren't they?
They are awful.
They are awful.
Have we said this before? Have we said this before?
I don't know.
It's worth saying, just in case we haven't, they are awful.
They are.
I am massively, massively opposed. I mean, I find time wasting when it's against my team really, really annoying. But I'm massively against this whole thing about, like, I mean, I hate the amount of injury time that's being used in football now. I think that there's a virtue in eating the clock in situations like that, if there's a tactical advantage to be had in doing so. Football shouldn't have to guarantee entertainment. It's sport. A sport for winning. It's not there for your entertainment. It's there for you to watch your team win or to observe if you're a neutral. And I think that taking away that, I mean, and it also smacks of trying to commodify and turn football into content by saying, the fans aren't getting value for money. The subscribers aren't getting value for money. The TV companies aren't getting value for money because it's being wasted by all these nasty professionals who are spending all this time not playing football, not doing beautiful things with the football that we can then memeify and stuff like that. I think it reeks personally. It reeks of capitalism. I'm up against it.
I've seen other theories floating around as well. What if I said to you that some people are blaming it on five subs now? The fact that we've got five subs. When we had the long ball beforehand, in the old days, in the 80s, we only had one, maybe two substitutes. Now we have five. Now you can change half of the outfield and you can have fresh players on there pretty much throughout the game. Is that going to be something that is going to have a material effect on the way that football is played? Footballers are fitter than ever now, aren't they? And now you can get half of your team changed during a game.
Yes, if you can get some pacey wingers down the flank, sort of like halfway through the second half, chasing longer balls.
Yep.
That may be what you're thinking about.
Just the fact that if you are going to play a counter-attacking game and you do need to cover 50 yards on a long ball, then...
Yeah, it would help, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that would fit. I mean, I suppose you're right, the example you gave about wingers maybe chasing longer balls, but I struggle to see how that the five-sub thing would be something that would drive this because, you know, when did the five-sub thing come in? It's been a few years now, hasn't it?
COVID, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, and now it's having an effect?
Some things take longer to have an effect as people get used to them and figure out new tactics available because you have new opportunities there.
It's definitely something to think about. I shall bear that in mind when watching games in the future and seeing substitutions on and maybe having us and then thinking about that. And then maybe we can report back later in the season and see if we have any observations on that question.
Well, yes.
My initial thought to that is that, to your point, players are fitter than ever. They can run faster, for longer, they can jump higher, and they can do it for a lot of these guys, can do it for long periods of time. And then, you know, you replace them with someone you can do it just as well. And he's, you know, he's been sitting there and he's in his nice blanket ready to come on. the players have just got better and they can do more stuff, basically.
Yeah, but because we have five subs, generally an outfield player only has to play 60 minutes a game rather than upwards of 75, 80 minutes. Now, of course, you could say, well, that's great. That means with all the fixtures they have to play, that's good for players. But if the manager's going, right, you're only out there for 60 minutes, I want to see you put 90 minutes of effort into 60 minutes, yeah, you're going to get this very energetic form of football. Lots and lots of closing down, lots of transitions. And I think that's what we have seen over the last few years, is you've seen players going out there and giving it all because they know they don't have to do it for 90 minutes. Maybe that has got something to do with the newer ways that we're seeing in the Premier League at the moment. But something to keep an eye on, maybe. I have a feeling that we're going to watch the next round of fixtures, maybe a little closer, and see if there's anything else we can blame. Any other stone we can turn up and say, ah, yes, it's definitely Brentford's fault.
Or Chelsea's.
Definitely. I think most of this is Chelsea's fault.
Yeah.
Really?
I'd agree with that.
I mean, it all goes back to Mourinho, doesn't it?
Yes.
Most of it, yeah.
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 Now, that was anti-football.
Yeah.
Apart
from his Inter side, which won the European Cup, that wasn't. That was brilliant.
Yeah.
But that's because they're an Italian team, and Italian teams are allowed to be like that.
Yeah, and they beat Bayern in the final as well.
And they beat Bayern in the final and knocked out Barcelona in the semi.
It's all coming out now, isn't it?
knocked out Pep Barcelona in the semi-finals, which was hilarious.
That was a genuinely hilarious Champions League campaign.
It really was. The highlight being Barcelona turning on the sprinklers immediately after the end of the Inter, while the Inter players was that was just like, I mean, I'm definitely here for that kind of pettiness. Anyway, sorry, we're interrupting your flow. You were taking us into the box set and I've completely ruined your segue. So yeah, anyway, yes, we will watch with interest this week's football, won't we, Graham?
I guess so, but I wonder what we'll be watching this weekend. Well, there are some huge games this weekend. Don't come much bigger than the game at the Stadium of Light, does it, Jan? As the top two face off.
Potential top two, Graham. Potential top two. Because if I was to say yes to that, and then Sunderland, I was going to finish this recording and go and sit down, pour myself a nice glass of beer and watch Sunderland get 10 put past them by Everton. By Moyes! Moyes!
Yeah, exactly.
Then that I would look really silly, wouldn't I? Or even sillier than normal. But Sunderland not got anything out of Arsenal, are they?
Well, who knows? And Terry, it's the A23 derby as well, isn't it, this weekend?
It certainly is. It's the A23 derby, and we do love it. We're long for the day when we get it relocated to Crawley, so it just makes it that much easier for us all to get there. Palace v Brighton, cigarette paper between those two clubs, really, at the moment. As probably as close a derby game as there's been in many, many years, I would suggest to you. So, yeah, I will be previewing that game, and I will be pooing my pants while it's gone. I might find something else to do.
There's also City versus Liverpool, so you can all get nostalgic about, remember the good old days of Klopp versus Pep. But that should be a belter, actually, on Sunday afternoon. But if you want to see what we pick and what we think of those games that are going to take you from Friday to Sunday, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe to our Substack, and it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. Yes, 7 previews. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFell, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
L- lovely. That was good. I enjoyed that.
It was quite fun.
I enjoyed that one.
It was fun. I like it when we talk about football.
It is fun to talk about football occasionally, isn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't admin.
I always like the ones when we talk about football because they're just so refreshing and unusual.
Yeah. We all get a bit, can we talk about football?
Easy now. I want to sound like an analyst.
No. Don't worry. We'll go back to talking about VAR next week.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.